Okay, outside of the land of Israel, this week we are going to read Parshas Bahar, and of course Parshas Bahar, which contains so much of a connection to the land of Israel, begins Bahar Sinai Lemor at Har Sinai, and Rashi's famous question has to be asked, Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai, why are the laws of Shemitah, which are introduced at the beginning of this Parsha, why are they mentioned at Har Sinai? And Rashi goes on to explain that this comes to teach us that just like Shemitah had its general and its specific rules, its kolos and its pratos, taught at Har Sinai, so too the other rules of the Torah were given the same way. Now, if Rashi's correct, and that was the point of the message, why do we have to wait to teach that lesson, that the specifics and the generals were given with Shemitah? Why don't we teach it right away with the very first mitzvah? Why don't we just state that the mitzvos of all of Parshas Yisro and Parshas Mishpatim were given Bahar Sinai? So the Ben Ish Chai explains that Shemitah and Har Sinai have a very close and unique aspect to them. That which was lacking in them is what makes them special. That is to say, Har Sinai was chosen as unique because it lacks the bells and whistles of the other mountains. Similarly, Shemitah too involves the lack of growth. Sometimes we make it a point to point out our greatest mila, and our greatest mila is knowing who we are. But sometimes our greatest mila is identified in knowing and being content with what we're not. And so the Ben Ish Chai says that's why we point out Har Sinai. It was in Har Sinai to point out that Shemitah and Har Sinai are no less important because of what they're not. Sometimes they're more important because of what they're not. It helps them understand where they are and what they do, and how they are indeed unique. The Torah tells us in regard to Yovel that Avavarta Shofar Truah B'Chodesh Hashvi, that we have a responsibility to blow a shofar. And the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah notes that the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah every single year and the blowing of shofar of Yovel on Yom HaKippurim are exactly the same. Yet the Rambam in his Pirush HaMishnayos, in his commentary in the Sefer HaMitzvos, distinguishes between the mitzvah to hear the shofar on Rosh Hashanah and the mitzvah to blow the shofar on Yom Kippur of Yovel. And so the Achronim ask, if this is the case, that there is a distinction, why do we not all have a responsibility to blow shofar on Yovel? In other words, the Rambam says that when it comes to the mitzvah of hearing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, part of the reason why we can be yotzei with a single individual is because the main mitzvah is for us to hear. When it comes to here to blowing the shofar in Yovel, it's a different issue. So the Achronim all ask, if that's the case, why do we not all have to blow a shofar on Yovel? It would seem to be a context. So Rosh Hashanah Shalita quoted the Avnei Nezer, who had a whole back and forth with his brother as to what his father said on the issue. The Avnei Nezer notes that the concept of Shomea Ka'ona, that one who hears can be considered as if he's responding, that only applies to words. That shofar is a mitzvah in making noise, and Shomea Kaona doesn't apply to making noise. He later changes that opinion, and he seems to come out with the following understanding that there's a difference. Shofar in Rosh Hashanah is not just about making noise. Shofar in Rosh Hashanah is in a context of tefillah. When I blow the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, I'm doing something special. I'm praying to God. I'm just praying to God without words. And maybe that's the difference with Rosh Hashanah as well. The mitzvah over there is to hear. Since what does it mean, l'shmoa kol shofar? So Rosh Hashanah explained to us that when the mitzvah l'shmoa seems to imply that there are words to be heard, and so therefore Shomea Ka'ona would apply. By Yovel, there is no mitzvah to hear the sound. It's not about the sound. It's about the there's nothing contained. There's no depth to the sound in the shofar of Yovel. In fact, it's all about the noise, letting it be a sign to the Avadim that they have to go free, that this is their opportunity to go free. It's just the signal. The idea is in the blowing, as opposed to that which is being blown. Okay. Afterwards, we're told, after Yovel, b'mispar shnei tvuos yimacher lach. The Torah, the Gemara in Erchanan, Daf Chavtes Amid Beis, determines that based upon this, you have to wait 2 years after Yovel before selling real estate. The Gemara adds that this is true even if you're selling the real estate with the intention and willingness of both the buyer and the seller. And so the question has to be asked, why does the Torah insist that you wait 2 years after Yovel before selling real estate if both sides are interested? What's to be gained? Who's the third partner who we have to be worried about? So Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, points out that the Torah wants us to understand that we're not the ultimate Bailim on the land of Israel. God is. In fact, that lesson expands to all areas of possession. That is to say, it's not only true in the land of Israel. God is fully involved in the world. La Hashem Ha'aretz U'Mlo'a. And so through the process of focusing on this world, and by the process of focusing on the fact that there are limitations, even when everybody wants it, if God doesn't want it, the sale doesn't go through. And so God says, let's wait 2 years in order to make sure that this lesson gets carried home. Torah adds that if we follow all these rules, v'yishavtem al ha'aretz labetach, that we'll sit on the land securely, labetach. That word in Israel and in Israeli language is a very important issue. When you want to declare certainty and you are an Israeli, the first word that comes out of your mouth is betach, or certainly. Now there are three psukim in the Torah that refer to betach in the context of the land of Israel. We have our pasuk, v'yishavtem al ha'aretz labetach. We have a pasuk in next week's parsha in Bechukosai, which speaks of v'yishavtem lavetach ba'aretzechem. And then we have one in Re'eh, where we're told, v'hiniach lachem mikol oyvechem misavi v'yishavtem betach. Right, that God, that will be left free of enemies and sit betach. So the great Kabbalist Rabbi Gamliel Rabinovich Solita explains that the Torah is speaking to three groups of people. And he says he uses the most recent battle that we just had in the land of Israel as a proof. The first one speaks to people who are on top of the land, la betach aleh. They're secure, they can sit securely with bitachon and Hashem, even while the bloodthirsty terrorists try to tunnel underneath the land. You'll be aleha, and they'll be underneath it, if we have the bitachon. The second refers to the rest of Am Yisrael, who place their trust in Hashem, and Hashem again promises, v'yishavtem lavetach b'aretzechem, if you get the Birchas HaTorah that are identified based on the beginning of Parshas Bechukosai, then you will sit lavetach b'aretzechem. And the third is a promise to the Chayalei Tzahal, who sometimes need to leave the borders in order to protect Eretz Yisrael, and to protect Bnei Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. So there they don't, it's not lavetach b'aretzechem, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, v'hiniach lochem mikol oyvechem misaviv, that their purpose and their mission is the enemies around, and they too will be v'yishavtem betach. They'll be able to take the bitachon in knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of them. Then we're told in regard to business deals between Jews, al tikach meiton neshech v'tarbit, that a person is not allowed to charge interest. And at the end of the Sefer Nidchei Yisrael, the Chafetz Chaim Zatzal notes the terrible effect of taking interest. He says that when Yechezkel experienced the episode of the Atzmos HaYaveshos, the dry bones, he noticed that one body didn't rise with the rest of the bodies. And when he asked why, he was told that the individual was one who took interest from his neighbors. Such people are not allowed to rise in Tchias HaMesim. So the Chafetz Chaim added that it's Mida Keneged Mida. The individual himself who charges interest doesn't want to uphold his downtrodden fellow man. And so therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you don't want to hold him up, I don't want to hold you up. And so therefore, I'm not going to let you rise again. So the Chafetz Chaim added that this is a crucial lesson in life. Many people don't know or understand the terrible embarrassment in the future that rises from this challenge. We have a responsibility to rise to our challenges. We have a responsibility to grow. We're told, in regard to dealing with Jews, losir debo beperach, that a person is not supposed to work with an eved beperach, with a rigor. And Rashi explains this means causing an eved to do unnecessary work, even to torture him. So Nissen Karelet Shalita was asked to explain how could this halacha still apply today. And so he explained that when a wife is preparing for Pesach, and then at the point of exhaustion, her husband introduces a series of back-breaking chumras all at once, this could be a violation of losir debo beperach. Similarly, if a person's breaking the law, says like breaking building laws, and then he says, oh, I'm going to make it simis, and I'm going to make life difficult. Or a guy comes into the shul, and he drives the board and the rabbi crazy, right? And he's organizing rallies and making demands, and everybody's machane tzimis, all for people knowing all the while that he's wrong. This too, says Rav Nissen Karelitz, may be lo sir debo beperach leinecha. And there are a lot of times that we engage in trying to make everybody else do a little bit more work, knowing that we're asking them to do because we are not willing to take care of our responsibility. It doesn't mean that we can't ask other people to engage in chasadim. It just means that we have to know that those chasadim require us to do what we're supposed to do, not just to make everybody else's lives miserable. The last pasuk in the parasha tells us, as Shabbos Saitish Mor Mikdashiti Ro, that we need to protect, Hashem wants us to protect His Shabbos and fear His Mikdash. And the Baal HaTurim explains that this pasuk reminds us that the building of the Mikdash doesn't replace the Shabbos law requirements. And so Rav Yehuda Amital Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the great famous founding Rosh Hashiva of Har Etzion, Zatzal explained that it's important for a person to have spiritual elements in his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, it's also crucial for spiritual elements to be based firmly in objective halachic action in the Torah true life. You need a mikdash to fear, but you also have to have a Shabbos that gets protected. You need to have a kegavna element to Shabbos, but it's meaningless without a hardcore observance symbolized by Rabbi Madlikin. Rabbi Amital pointed out that that's why the minhag in Har Etzion was to say both. He feels that we're encouraging within Shabbos both aspects, and certainly that duality is something that in Judaism certainly plays a crucial role. I believe it's the famous Tana Rav Shimon ben Asano who turns out and makes that statement in Pirkei Avos. He says, Hevi Zayir, a person has to be careful with Kriya Shema, but Ha'usa Tfiloso Keva, if a person, a person has to be careful not to make the tefillah that he davens so much dedicated to the clock. We need to have both. There needs to be a clock in tefillah, but that needs to be something that's not the only focus that we're involved in when we're davening. Finally, in this week's Haftorah, we in Chutz Laaretz, we read about Yirmiyahu and the purchase of the field from his cousin Hanamel. Now, the pasuk makes a whole story out of the fact that Hanamel knew that he was in dire straits, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yirmiyahu, go to Hanamel's going to come in here in the prison, and he's going to try to get you to buy his family stay achuza, and you should go ahead and do so. Now, why does Yirmiyahu not realize that Hanamel is so dire that he needs to sell his family stay achuza? Why does he need Hashem to tell him? Didn't he see what was going on? So Salavitchik Zatzal explained that Yirmiyahu was not merely being told to do an act of charity. He was being asked to perform an act of belief and commitment that ultimately Hanamel's field would return to its rightful heirs. And he, as a family member, was one of those rightful heirs. Yovel, too, is a promise that we'll have an achuza in the land. Rav Soloveitchik added that that's why we always continuously study the laws of Zoram, which conveniently we're learning right now in the Mishnah Yomis. We do that with that idea in mind. V'shavu banim l'gvulam, collectively promising that we, too, will always return to our land. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant us that opportunity, and may we all experience a Shabbat Shalom.